I lost track of how many unemployment claims there have been, something like 40 million since this all began with the coronavirus. A lot of folks heading back to work now, finally. Others remain on the unemployment. They're making more money, and they seem to like that, getting a government check for doing little. You know, income depends on a lot of variables, where you live, your education. Frankly, the biggest variable is how hard you're going to work. Hard work is something that's overlooked all too often. Michael Petrilli is the president of the Thomas Fordham Institute, and we're here to talk about income today, something a little bit different. Michael, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
All right, so let's talk about making some money around here, because let's be honest. If you make $100,000 a year and you live in New York City, I don't think you're probably doing that all that well. If you make $100,000 and live in North Dakota, life might be grand.
Yep.
Right or wrong?
Absolutely right. And the reason why it's important to think about all of this in the world that I live in, which is in the world of education, is that we have been so focused on getting people, everybody, a four-year college degree because we think that's going to give people these high salaries. That's true if you're in a place like New York City where people with college degrees make way more than everybody else. They need to make that to live decently because, as you say, there's high cost of living. But in other parts of the country, turns out, as you and your listeners already know, that you can do pretty well even if you don't have that four-year college degree, if you've got technical skills, you trade, and as you say, if you work hard. The income inequality issue is really largest in those big blue liberal cities like New York and Washington and San Francisco, much less so in the rest of the country.
So the people that are complaining the most and the loudest about inequality and the disparity between those that have and those that have not are in the very places where it's exaggerated.
Yeah.
How is that?
I live in the D.C. area, and we see it.
Sorry
with
about that.
Right? I mean, it's true. I mean, that when you look at some of these places where especially the white-collar workers with those college degrees are making such high salaries, and then everybody else is mostly working in these service sector jobs, many of them without much more than a high school diploma, there is this huge gap. There's not much of a middle class in a place like Washington or New York. There's not manufacturing. There's not mining. There's not oil and gas. There's not those other opportunities.
Well, if there were, they would get rid of it. If there were those jobs, they'd make sure they got rid of them immediately to save the world.
That's right.
But you know, I want to make a point here because some very successful people that I have met in my life don't have college degrees. They created their own businesses. They believed in themselves. They rolled up their sleeves. Yep. They went to work, and they made things happen. I mean, maybe the most successful company in world history at this point could be considered to be Apple, I think it's fair to say. Steve Jobs didn't go to college. Now, did he?
Right. And that's absolutely right. So, look, what we're trying to say in this new study where we look at this college earnings premium by geography is that young people, if you're young or if you're the parent of a young person, they're trying to decide what to do with their life. Of course, they want to decide what do they want to spend their days doing, what are they willing to work hard at. Certainly, depending on the profession and the sector they choose, they're going to have to decide what kind of education do they need. They probably will need something more than a high school diploma in many cases. But again, it doesn't have to be that four-year degree. But the key question, one of the key questions, and we never talk about this, is where do they want to live? If they're growing up in a small metro area or a small town and they want to stay there, that may give them a very different decision than if they decide that, I really do want to, head off and live in New York or head off and live in San Francisco.
Well, you bring something up to mind here. Michael Petrilli, president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. And that is, unfortunately, there are towns, certainly in the eastern United States, the Berkshires in Massachusetts come to mind as a place that I've been. And people that want to stay in that small town and those small towns in western Massachusetts, you can't afford to. People grow up in towns that they can't afford to live in because there's just no possibility of it because the money that is rolled into places like that makes it impossible to stay there unless you have, generational wealth. You're not staying. Is that true? I mean, that is, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. But most of America, it does not look like that. In most of America, the cost of living is quite reasonable. And there's not this huge income inequality that we see in some of these places, like you say, Massachusetts, New York, San Francisco. You look at a place like, say, out in the Western Plains, I'd say North Dakota now with the oil and gas exploration, you know, you still make more money if you've got a college degree, but it's not a ton more money than those guys that are working in the oil fields. And so, so maybe they get maybe 10%, 20%, 30% more in terms of salary, versus in New York City, where you get twice as much money if you've got a college degree than if you don't.
And here's something else out there, because if you look at some other options out there, and you talk about North and South Dakota, if a young person decides that, hey, I don't want to go to college and rack up $100,000 in debt, but I want to go into the trades, a lot of these trades, be it carpenters, plumbers, electricians, companies will bring people in and pay them. You earn while you learn, actually, and you get paid to be an apprentice. You get paid to be on a 5 or 6 or 8 year program, whatever it turns out to be. But you make money all the way through. From the time that you're 21 years old, you're not paying off student debt. You're putting money in your bank account. And if you're investing money when you're 21 into investment accounts, by the time you're 50, it can really blossom. I mean, it's a game-changing approach to life, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yet, what do we do when it comes to our high schools? You know, in almost every high school in America today, the vast majority of students are still tracked into the so-called college prep track, you know, which is getting them ready, really, for the four-year college degree. Like, everybody's going to go on and be an English major. Very few high schools provide apprenticeships. Very few high schools provide real technical training where kids can get started on those kinds of training programs, can start to work on getting those industry credentials that are valuable. Instead, you know, we have everybody pretending like they're getting ready to go to the Ivy League. And look, a lot of kids are bored. It's not for them. They're ready to do something else. We need to give them that option.
So the question then, Michael, is how many communications degrees is too many? How many communications degrees does one nation need? There's the bottom line.
Well, you know, we need people to be able to know how to write and send those tweets. So I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, well, I've seen some of those tweets. I think maybe some of these people probably should not have earned their degree. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. All right, so where do we go from here, literally? It depends on where you live. Should people be looking at different options? You talk about the plains being the Dakotas, maybe Montana, Wyoming, Idaho. I don't know. Give me a couple of the destinations you think are good. We've got about 30 seconds here. Give me some places that people should be thinking about.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the key question is whether people want to stay home or they want to move away from home. And most Americans want to stay home. You know, you look at the data, most people live, you know, within 20 miles of their mother. And I think that's telling us something. And so we need an education system that prepares people to make a good living in their own communities rather than an education system that's really designed by just by people who live inside these few blue bubbles where the income inequality issue is so great.
Well, there you go. Thank you for breaking it down. Michael Petrilli, president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. The money depends on where you call home, oftentimes, and how hard you're willing to work. Michael, good conversation. Thank you for being here in the No Panic Zone.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
There you have it. Good conversation. Fun stuff. 41 after. By the way, George Floyd, COVID-19 positive. I'll tell you about it after the break.
Student safety affects us all, and you can make a difference using OK to Say.
Did you know that in 81% of violent incidents in U.S. schools, at least one other person had information that a school attack was planned but failed to report it?
How many lives could have been saved if just one person had said something?
OK to Say can change that. OK to Say is an easy and confidential way for Michigan students to report anything that threatens their safety or the safety of others.
If you see or hear something that doesn't seem right, you can submit a confidential tip using the OK to Say mobile app.
Or you can submit by text, email, the OK to Say website, or call 8555-OK-TO-SAY.
The tip information is confidential, so you never have to worry about retaliation, rejection, or being labeled a snitch. It's that easy.
You might be the one person who helps to prevent a tragedy.
Take a stand and protect yourself and others by using OK to Say, because if you won't, who will?
This message sponsored by OK to Say and MAB.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like
a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar...